prosper prosperity, becoming wealthy in the age of Trump. I look forward to helping you crush Mr. Market at VRAinsider.com.
The rain has not even ended from what was Hurricane Harvey, and officials are already making some grim predictions about how long it's going to take to climb back. Here's a look at that angle from USA's Jason Wirt.
The destruction left behind by Tropical Storm Harvey may leave areas of Houston uninhabitable for months. Federal Emergency Management Agency Director Williams Long predicts his agency will be in the Houston area for years. Appearing on CNN's State of the Union, Long said this storm is going to be a landmark event. Long says FEMA is in Texas focusing on response and helping the state. Long adds FEMA teams are also preparing recovery housing for flood and storm victims. Other federal workers will be on the ground to begin aiding victims with implementing flood insurance claims.
No concerns that it would be anything as bad as Harvey, but the mid-Atlantic of the United States is now expecting impacts from a tropical storm. The depression is expected to become Tropical Storm Irma by the end of today. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn-Root. I was one of the biggest critics of Obama in the national media. Suddenly, I was under massive IRS attack. So I hired Sam Landis. Sam did an amazing job. We won twice. I didn't owe a penny. Thank you, Sam Landis. Many of you have IRS problems and you've spent thousands with non-lawyer tax resolution firms. Do yourself a favor. Call Sam Landis for a free consultation. Trust me, Sam Landis is the best. Sam saved my life. Call Sam at 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. That's toll free. 800-WE-HELP-YOU with the letter U. 800-WE-HELP-YOU.
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson seeming to be distancing himself from President Trump. As Tillerson says, the U.S. government maintains its commitment to long-held values, but adds, President Trump, quote, speaks for himself. Tillerson said that on Fox News Sunday, referring to the nation's commitment to combating discrimination, which he says should be without question. According to Tillerson, quote, we express America's values at the State Department.
We represent America's values, our commitment to freedom, our commitment to equal treatment of people the world over, and that message has never changed.
Does sandwich size matter? Down to the inch? AP Harold has that story.
Give an inch, take $500,000? Not so fast. Calling the litigation utterly worthless, the Chicago Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals tossed a $535,000 lawsuit settlement claiming Subway footlong subs aren't actually the full 12 inches. The class action suit claimed that the sandwich chain cheated customers by providing 11-inch subs. Subway countered that regardless of bread length, the same amount of toppings are given to every customer with extras offered free of charge. Subway also promised to strive for full footlongs in the future.
And turnout to the nation's movie theaters was about the lightest that it's been in a summer weekend in over a decade, but the top movie for the record was, for the second straight week, The Hitman's Bodyguard. Remember, you can find us online at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Hey, Pat, did you know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We could do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, Handyman Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts. We cover the basement to the attic and everything in between.
You can even call us at 908-237-0410 during our radio program about our home improvement projects. Remember, Home Sweet Home, every Friday at 11 on Hunterton Chamber Radio.
From the basement to the attic, you're listening to Steve and Patrick. Home Sweet Home.
Local weather here today at HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Today, mostly sunny, high near 77. Getting about that out there right now. Cloudy on the overnight, around 57. Tuesday chance of showers mainly after 2 p.m. A chance of showers Tuesday night late. Wednesday, partly sunny, high close to 80. In the 50s on Wednesday night. Chance of showers and thunderstorms on Thursday, late in the afternoon, and into the early evening. Sunny on Friday. Stay tuned for Chef Bill's Table.
Lou lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Hey, welcome to Chef Bill's Table and Get Together. Your host, Bill Kinslow from Jake's here in Flemington, New Jersey. And we get together every Monday around this time and also on Rewind to talk about food, beverages, things of local interest, things you might... Good dinner conversation right at the table. No politics, no religion, just food and beverages. Got a nice show today, a couple of local gentlemen, local businesses here in the area. Pete Nercio from Black River Spice and Tea Company up in Tewksbury, and Kane Fowler from Skunktown Distillers in Flemington, right on Minneconning Road. New business starting up here. And these two are related. If you think about distilled spirits, especially now with the boom in craft distilling and craft brewing, there's a use for Pete's product, the bulk herbs and spices. And tasted a couple of things already, and it's amazing what will go into spirits and beer. We're going to talk about the spirits today. Kane's come up with some nice, unique items, but we'll go through the process and how these two businesses relate as far as supplying. It's a B2B type thing, but also the use for your herbs and botanicals in distilled spirits. After all, flavored vodkas are out there and all kinds of interesting things. Gin, obviously the first flavored vodka, if you think about it. And we'll find out what Kane does, how he works his magic with Pete's product. Morning, Pete. How are you?
Good, Bill. How you doing?
All right. Kane, nice to meet you. Nice to see you.
Same here, Bill.
So, distilling. What made you get into that, Kane, get into the distilling business?
Well, the story is kind of simple. We were around a campfire, like many good ideas, and had a few too many and said, let's figure out how to make some liquor for ourselves. And that was the inception of what is now Skunktown Distillery.
So was it started as a hobby thing, just for your own use?
It was almost a personal challenge between two friends of, hey, can we make this happen? Can we figure out how this all comes together and makes a good product in the end?
Okay. I guess a lot of good ideas start that way, right?
Exactly.
And Pete, from your end of it, you were the one that brought Kane here. How does your spice business relate to the distilling business?
Well, it's an interesting story. I was at one of the Leeds meetings, and I was talking to Ann Thornton, and we were discussing where you could use herbs and spices, and she said, you know, I've been to the Skunktown Distillery, and she said, you know, that might be a good place to go see if they're interested in herbs and spices. And really, I had no idea. I guess I did have an idea, but it just didn't click. And then all of a sudden, just looking into it, distilling and brewing, too. The two use quite a bit when it comes to herbs and spices.
So, Kane, basically on distilling now, do you use your... there's two types of stills out there. If you explain it to the listeners, that The column still and the pot still. What's
sure,
the difference?
Sure, column still and a pot still. I'll call them a reflux still and a pot still. The difference is what product you're going to make and what proof you're going to get off of the still. So a reflux still is continually vaporizing and condensing the alcohol as it climbs through a tall column. That ends up putting off a product that can be in the range of 190, 195 proof alcohol, which is the requirement by the feds for vodka.
That's for your clear spirits. You want that higher proof?
Yeah, well, it's for a flavorless spirit.
Flavorless,
so the
right.
Higher proof, the more pure the alcohol.
And when you come off at 140 proof, it's more with the...
It's got more amino acids, more flavors in
the
it.
The congeners that they call
exactly,
the flavor
the
elements.
They're coming off of a pot still, which is a more simplistic and a lower temperature, lower proof still.
Okay, so say when you're doing vodka, so when people say triple distilled vodka.
Yes, I love to hear these things. I'll be quite honest, and I do it in the tasting room many times. That's a marketing term. For me personally, being in the industry, when you say triple distilled, 99 times distilled, there's no way, unless you're sitting in that distillery and watching every single batch, that you can confirm that that thing is being run and then taken off and rebatched into a brand new run. And when you're getting into large commercial-sized distilleries, they're not even doing batch distilling. They're just doing continuous run distilling that never shuts down.
The continuous still, yes. Yeah.
So refluxing multiple times is a matter of calculation, and once you get into calculations, it becomes a marketing term in my mind. I could say something easily, but I'll say I put it through my still enough that I get it off as vodka, and it's vodka that you're going to appreciate.
As long as it's at that right proof, I mean, by doing it over again, are you going to get anything better?
No, you're not going to get that much better. That's why if you have to distill something 110 times to get vodka off of a still, come on over and I'll teach you how to use your still a little better because we can save you some energy, you know?
So, but you do use a pot still for other...
For our whiskeys and our rums, we do use a pot still, and then for our vodka, we use a reflux or a column.
And that's
still.
Where you take, as far as I understand, the... it's in thirds, kind of. The first third you set aside, you take the middle third, and then the last third, those two,
yeah,
first and third get redone?
That's correct. There's what we call heads, then we call hearts, which is the actual alcohol that you'll drink, and then the tails, which have a whole bunch of amino acids. And the tails and the heads, they're not exactly one-third, but they're a proportion.
Well, that's for the distiller to find out, too. You've got to
exactly.
Sample.
And the still. You have to work with the still and really get tuned in. Like
so that's really the craft part of it there,
yes.
With the pot distilling. So... And when you're making gin over there, I'm just, you know, curious. So you're going to still distill your gin, the high proof, off the column still.
We're essentially going to use our vodka base because it has to be a neutral spirit. And then after that, we're going to actually infuse it in some of the spices because we're using some really mild spices in some cases that just wouldn't come through a gin basket and getting distilled.
The gin head, right. So normally you would distill it again and let the heat, the vapor...
Go right through
extract.
The spices and extract on the way, which is a perfectly fine way of doing gin. Another way is to soak directly in the spices that you want to have the right flavors of. So we do a combination to get the ideal product.
Because that's what they used to call bathtub gin, right?
Yeah.
When you just you took that really lousy, bad-tasting alcohol, and they had to color it up a little bit, and you had your cut it with the water, and it was in a bathtub, apparently, because that's how you could... The bottles were too tall to fill, so you had to scoop it out of a tub, right? I was reading the history of it.
I was reading something, too, that I thought was interesting. They were saying that if you do make your own types of liqueurs or spirits, you can't start with bad vodka, they say, because the flavors won't cover up bad vodka. So you have to start off with quality to make good quality-flavored products. I'm not
That's
sure.
That's true. There's always... cheap ways to get cheap vodka to taste better. You know, throw any cheap, gallon bottle of vodka through a Brita a couple of times, you're going to start getting it tasting better, but it's never going to get to a premium vodka because it was never distilled right.
So you say, I'm talking before the show, you use potato as your base, which
that's correct.
A lot of people for years assumed your Russian vodka and the Polish vodka is all they have to be made from potatoes. Well, they don't have to be, but that is wherever your starch... that can you get sugar out of, you can use, right?
That's
like,
correct.
What, Tito's is corn-based,
corn-based, yep. There's grain. Liberty out of Philadelphia uses grain, rye grain for their vodka. So the only thing that separates vodka from any other liquor out there is the proof at which it comes off the still. If it comes off at 190 proof or higher, it can be called vodka or a neutral spirit at that point in time. So you can make it out of anything, but there's obviously preferences, and they lend themselves, even at that high proof, to very minute flavor changes and character changes of the liquor.
And then so about 40% of the product after that is what water you're diluting it with down to bottle strength.
Oh, if you think about it, so a wash that we make or a mash that we make, it's almost like making a beer, right? You add all your spices and all the rest of your ingredients, and then you ferment it. A normal beer comes off at about 4 to 6, maybe 8, maybe 10% for a real good IPA.
Right.
And that's going to be the cap of your beer because of the health of the yeast. That's going on in your fermentation capsule. We have a different strain of yeast, so we can actually bring ours up to about 17%. If you think about it, that's alcohol by volume, which means when I distill it, if I distilled it perfectly, out of 100 gallons I'm distilling, I'm only getting 17 gallons of alcohol, and really
right.
That's not what I'm getting. I'm getting about 12 to 15 because of just mixing and loss. So,
all right, we're going to pursue that. We've got a break for a couple of messages here from local sponsors, and find out about the fascinating world of distilling. Chef Bill's Table.
Have you had enough of mine? Are you reeling in the yeast?
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
I'm your ice cream man, stop me when I'm passing by.
It's time to visit Pambies, the newest ice cream shop in town. Pambies Purely Delicious ice cream, gelato, and sorbet made in Hunterdon County from unique blends of natural extracts, herbs, and spices. Created with a rich, creamy texture bursting with flavor. Tickle your palate with exotic flavors such as rose cardamom, hot mango, and ginger lemon. Or satisfy your craving for dark chocolate, pecans, and caramel. Located on Route 31 south of Clinton. Pambies. Purely delicious.
Remain, baby, stop me when I'm passing by. See now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi and Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms. When they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi and Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Back at Chef Bill's Table here, talking with Kane and Pete about distilled spirits and how to make them and how we can spice it up, right, Pete?
Exactly.
So for something like gin implies juniper. I guess by law it has to contain juniper. Juniper is the main flavoring agent. But there's many other things that might go in there, right?
Yes.
Angelica goes in there sometimes.
Angelica.
Yep.
And what would be would bitter orange peel be something, Pete, that you would sell also, the dried orange peel?
Sure. You see that in vodka sometimes, the orange flavored vodka. They also use it in Benedictine, the liqueur.
Yeah. Well, that's another one that's got tons of them in there.
And triple sec is another liqueur that uses.
That's primarily orange.
Yeah.
So, Kane, with your have you ever made distilled spirits from hard cider?
Not from hard cider exclusively, no.
Because it was a Beacon Skiff Farms up south of Syracuse. They were an old apple orchard family, made cider. Then another generation started hard cider, and now they're distilling, and they do vodka and gin from the apple base.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty neat because the vodka, although it's flavorless, still has a little apple in the nose there.
Yeah, we're actually doing something very similar this weekend, coming out with a peach shine. So it's Jersey fresh peaches, locally sourced that we hand peeled, hand pitted, mashed down. It's finally done fermenting, and we're running it tomorrow. So very similar.
Yeah, and would you spice that with anything?
No, it's almost going to be like a vodka with a nice peach aftertaste.
And if you were to make gin out of that, you would have to have the juniper.
Yeah, well, if I were to make gin out of it, the first thing I'd have to do is I'd have to distill it much higher so it came off as a neutral spirit or grain spirit, 190.
Okay.
And then after that, I have to put it in with juniper and then a mix of many other things. Some other spices that you didn't mention, cardamom, that's a very frequent black pepper, believe it or not.
Right?
Oh, definitely.
Coriander, Buddha's hand. There's a lot of different things that people are using. We have one distillery in Jersey City that's coming out with an Earl Grey gin using Earl Grey tea and juniper. So the gin world with the craft distillery world is really booming.
Oh, it's bouncing back big time.
Because
gin
was
amazing. Vodka just kind of displaced it for years.
Latest federal numbers are that we're opening in a nation a distillery or something distilled spirit related one per day across the nation.
So, well, just like the breweries did it,
Exactly, 15, 20 years ago. And that boom is happening, so people are going to be introduced to a different type of spirit that they're not used to, where they don't know what to call it necessarily. Our apple pie moonshine, which we make with pizza cinnamon sticks, tastes really amazing. It's made from rum and vodka combined, but it just blends to such an amazing space that you don't
taste
it.
So you have
those.
Your two base liquors.
But they both start at 140 proof, really high proof, and then we bring them down with the mixture that you tasted earlier, mm-hmm. and it tastes like a liquefied apple pie with a wonderful cinnamon spice at the end. And that's what craft distilling is about. Like any craft industry, we're going to change the rules a little bit and make you think outside the box. And we can't do it without a great spice base.
Yeah, people are looking for more flavor in things, I think. The clear distillate, fine. You want vodka to be flavorless, but now flavored vodkas, you talk about one a day as distillers. We get probably one a week comes out from the mass producers. Somebody's always coming up with a new flavor of vodka.
You know, it's interesting. I was reading something along the lines of flavoring spirits, and it turns out that historically when spirits got started, people were flavoring with all kinds of stuff. And what happened was someone said, well, okay, enough is enough. We have to define what gin is. We have to define. And they start cutting stuff out and said, you can't use this. You can't use that. You have to use this. And what's happening, it seems, is people are saying, well, why do we have to just stay within the box, what the standard was, was created to be? And this probably happened a lot in the 18th century and the 19th century. And they said, let's experiment. And I see that in Skunk Town, where they're experimenting.
Well, at least in the United States, product identity is the big thing with the name, especially the food world. Something is called ketchup, it implies that it's made with tomatoes and this and that. You just say the word ketchup, And it is what the name says it is.
It's got a legal definition.
And just like we talked about the gin. So and winemakers are going through the same issues with the classifications, what grapes you can grow. The New World doesn't care because they don't have those long traditional rules.
Correct.
And now the Old World wineries, they're starting to bend a little bit too because you want to compete. So your wines that would never, grapes that would never be allowed to be a classified wine, for example, in Burgundy, might now, somebody might say, you know, the heck with it. I don't want to plant Pinot Noir. I want to plant something else. I'm not going to call it Burgundy. I'll call it just red wine.
Yeah, and we're also learning that, look at the local wineries around here. They're making excellent wines, very table-ready wines that you don't have to challenge for. So you're not just looking for California and Italy for these great wines. You can now say, Hunterdon County is proud to have a local winery that's making exceptional wine that we'd love to put on our table. And I think with the two breweries in town and with the distillery,
with two breweries now, a distillery,
we're complete. We can fill out your entire liquor cabinet without leaving the county.
Well, you know what's nice is this return to local product also.
Yeah.
And the craft distilling and brewing is allowing us, and we have a coffee roaster near here now. Beverages, you know, I mean, it was always, you know, closer to the home is better. You're using product that probably, you know, well, let's say barley, for example, which is a lot of your whiskey basis. Mm-hmm. Barley's kind of, isn't it a cover crop
more
mostly?
Or less. Yep,
it's
fries,
good. For, it's good for the soil. You should actually do barley instead of throwing, you know, corn in the ground every year and killing the soil. We could get back to a little rotation, but now you have an outlet for that barley.
Correct. Correct.
Because then okay, your brewers and distillers could use that. Would you work with a brewer taking? Maybe the brewers, do they buy the mash? They buy the malt a lot of times?
Some of them do, but I know both of our local ones, they make it themselves out of local ingredients. But we are working together with both of them. So we take our oaked rum that with the chips that we oak it on, and then we give it to them, and they put it in their stout beer.
Oh.
And they finish it with a stout beer and things like that. And they're working, one of them is working on giving me an IPA that I can then distill and see what happens with that. So it's it
well, I
really
saw they had a with their beer. They have a whiskey cask over there in their
yes, they
Lone
did.
Eagle does.
Yep.
They were putting some there because that's mm-hmm. another thing now. You're coming up with your, we tried you're calling the moonshine, the apple pie, but crafted cocktails now.
Yes.
Just like you get a keg of beer, wineries now, if you're near a winery, you get a nice keg wine, you save the bottling, it's recyclable, reusable, and cocktails the same way. So you get consistency, it's all mixed, and put your herbs, botanicals, you've got your oak, whatever you want to say, a Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, you know, I was going to ask you, you should make your own, would you make a bottled martini with a bunch of botanicals that was already maybe 50, 60 proof, about, you know, the proof of a good cocktail?
Right.
And ready to go. Just keep it cold.
It's certainly possible. It's where places are going. Some places are starting. And we do, with our apple pie moonshine you tried and a ginger beer, we make a Skunktown Mule.
Okay.
So canning that would be very easy, you know.
Thinking outside the box a little bit, you have so much more freedom.
Yes.
You know, chefs are doing it with food. You know, you still need your base though. If you didn't know how to properly distill, none of this would matter.
That's correct.
You can't just go off and say, "Oh, I'm going to just and make, you know, less than desirable things." Just like with herbs and spices. What Peter said, you know, you can get the stuff that's sitting on the shelf for
regional
years.
Cuisine is always about what grows locally.
Yes.
And so by the same token, you know, regional distilling is about what's available locally. And, you know, that it shouldn't have to be something that's not available and you have to bring it in. That's how you get variation, is each area uses the ingredients indigenous to the area, and they come up with their own spin on vodka or rum or whatnot. And the same with foods. You know, like you have how many kinds of curries are there? You know, because the base is the same. They use the cumin, they use coriander,
whatever. Yeah, some consistency.
But then the minor components that kind of take the overall flavor in a certain spin are indigenous to that area where that particular curry comes from.
And we're discovering that as we get more aware. And, you know, it used to be, all right, curry powder was just, all right, that's Indian food. It's like, you know, chop suey was Chinese food. As long as it has soy sauce in it and ginger, then it's Chinese. And of course, you find out, well, Italian food is like that. When I started, you know, early on, everybody thought of just, you know, the spaghetti houses. But you start exploring all the regions. Every region is different. The wines are different. The food's different. So, yeah, the freedom that we have, but also you need the discipline of good technique, which
100%.
You're saying is, you know, funny, you mentioned that the chips for the aging. So this was probably the point of contention that people, wineries have. And so aging in barrels is like Scotch whiskey, 15-year, 20-year, hundreds, thousands of dollars a bottle because you have loss, you have your money tied up.
Correct.
So you're a proponent of doing something a little bit quicker.
I'm a proponent of both. I'm a proponent of what works for business, and you're going to see a lot of craft distilleries. They start out with wood chips, oaking on chips, things like that, to get your first 1-2 years worth of business running.
Okay.
And then you come out with a premium product that's, you know, you also, it's very tough when you're opening any new business to say, here's my premium product, unless you've done a ton of marketing, have oodles of money behind it and everything like that. It's tough to come out with an $80, $90 bottle of liquor straight out of the gate. It's much.
You've got to build a little bit of trust first.
Exactly, right? and that's why we came out. A lot of people have even asked us, you know, Tito's does vodka. Why do you guys do more than vodka? Because right now we have 6 products. We're about to launch our 7th.
I was surprised when Pete said you were counting. I went to your site. Wow, these guys are working here.
Yeah, yeah, you know? But it's one of those things where you know, it was a fun thing for us. We had fun with it, and because we had fun with it, we didn't put it down. It didn't stall. We just kept being you know, very artistic in our approach, and it created wonderful products that were new. They were different enough that people could say this was definitely from Hunterdon County or definitely from Skunktown. It's not your on-the-shelf vodka. And so why stop if we have that success? Why limit ourselves to a vodka or a rum? Because most families have rum drinkers, vodka drinkers, gin drinkers. So if we can cover them with a quality product, then we're going to. If we can't, then we're not going to release the product. Because one thing that having grown up and lived my whole life in Hunterdon County, quality is the number one thing to all of our people that live here and do business here. So that's what we're going to put out is good quality. And it's been successful so far.
Yeah, and the other thing I find was, I remember we had the smokehouse in town, Jugtown Mountain Smokehouse. I used to buy stuff from them. Then they outgrew their facility. And then distribution seems to be the big stumbling block. I know for the brewers, the wineries, besides the legal aspect of it, we have our 3-tier system here in New Jersey. But producers, you know, you're allowed to sell directly.
No, as craft distillers and liquor and brewers also, they can do direct distribution. So we do direct distribution right now, and we're succeeding, and we're growing our sales force. So we keep on going. We haven't hit our ceiling yet.
And that's where – are you allowed to ship the
carrier? We can't ship, but we do work with a few liquor stores locally that do have the right permits to ship globally.
So they can do it, okay.
So they can do it, yeah, on our behalf, basically, and we drive our customers to those people.
So what you find is, you know, of course, you're new, but once you're here and you get your tradition, your people will leave the area and still want that product from their local area.
Yes, pork roll, right?
Yeah, well, I'm from Syracuse. I'll still buy a Hoffman hot dog. They, you know, Wegmans has them because they're based, you know, out of Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll seek those products that I grew up with.
Yeah, and I learned a great lesson when I was younger. I grew up in Surgeonsville, which is originally called Skunktown, if anybody, any of the listeners
that's where
know,
the name comes
that's
from.
That's where the name comes from.
That was one of my questions. I was gonna
okay, and you might know, being in the world of foods, there was a great butcher shop down there called Maresca's, owned by two brothers, originally owned by their father. And you would actually go, there were stories in New York Times and high-quality magazines of people would go to Virginia and know the taste of Maresca's meat and say, this is from that butcher shop up in Surgeonsville, New Jersey, isn't it? So, yeah, they'll move out, but they'll still keep that connection, and other people will start to bring it. That's the organic growth of business.
Yeah, and what you're doing now, and again, not being hamstrung by a corporation or anything, you can come up with wild combinations, right?
Yeah, one of our business plans that was really key to our success, and it's very unique in the distillers world. There's about 14 distilleries now in New Jersey that are open, and almost every single one of them is a retired millionaire that decided to have a new project. We're one of the first bootstrappers where we went with as few number of investors as possible. We retained all control so that we could make the decisions and make sure that we didn't get indebted, so that we're just growing on top of our success rather than trying to dig out of a hole. And we've already expanded our tasting room once in the 6 months that we've been open, and we're in talks to see if we can expand it more in 2018.
So you're having no trouble selling your product?
Not at all. Actually, we've had about 3 or 4 weeks in a row where we sold out of almost every one of our products and had to scramble all week long and schedule everything so it would all ferment and distill on time. So, and work with Pete to make sure he's got product so that he's not holding us up.
Oh, I can't see that happening.
Not on my side.
He's got a nice warehouse full of.
Absolutely, I've got a warehouse full and a truck that I can fill real quick. So.
Humidity control and temperature control, right?
Yeah, it's all.
You know, and people don't realize, every step along the way, especially with a craft product, the product's been taken care of a little bit better than maybe the mass quantities.
We're way above even that bar. We hand peel every one of our potatoes for our vodka. We have an apple coring machine and we spin it so we can watch every single thing that goes into our product. The only two machines in our entire distillery is the food grade pump to move the mash into the distillery and the FDA approved bottling machine. Everything else is done by hand. Labeling, capping.
So you're bringing your base product, you're fermenting yourself.
We're bringing our water in on the backs of trucks and tanks from farms down in Delaware Township, so it's aquifer water.
That was
every
one of my questions.
Batch.
What's your water source? Because
every single batch is from the
wine.
Down
wine, you don't beer and spirits. You need a lot of water.
Yep. No, we manage it all, and then the wastewater, as much as we can bring back and irrigate back into the farms where we get our peppers and our other ingredients from, we work with it.
Yeah. See that whole ecosystem thing,
yes.
Right? And that's what because business is big business to be efficient. Of course, they use everything, but sometimes the cost of using it may exceed the benefit.
Correct.
Like factory farming, they say, we need the fertilizer, but we don't need it all in one place.
I do believe that we're starting to see in the greater economical world that people are realizing that worked for the bottom line, but it didn't work for the long-term sustainability of our entire country, and we need to go back to something that's more eco-conscious and sustainable. And that's why we even go as simple as using all electric so that we can eventually upgrade to solar and not have to
off the fossil fuels.
Get off the fossil fuels. And if we're and I'm really working with the state and with Hunterdon County to see if we can be considered an agricultural practice, because George Washington did it. It was an agricultural practice back in the day. And,
sure.
And we feel it should be considered and utilized as such and be out in farms where people can appreciate, the Garden State and what it's all about and what it can produce in our new era.
Yeah, and the new ones, the new factory farms, the actual factories that are the hydroponic places now, I mean, those are very sustainable. And that's something where technology and old school can kind of come together.
Correct.
And try to get the best of both.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing food closer to where the market is.
Yes.
So, it was the water I was going to... the sugar content of I'm going to call it your mash.
Sure.
Right? Does that matter much when you're distilling?
It does. It doesn't matter. I mean, it matters in a distillery. It doesn't matter when we're distilling. It matters in fermentation. And brewer will say the same thing. So your sugar is your yeast food. So how much sugar you have in there is how much alcohol you'll result. Right. And it's not one of those more is better, because at some point in time, sugar will actually either get so overconsumed by or yeast will get overconsumed by the sugar content that they can't survive, they can't reproduce, or they've eaten and reproduced and created so much alcohol or ethanol that they've created an environment they can't live in, and so they die, and the leftover sugar turns to like a bacterial stale flavor. And so you have to get just the right amount for what you anticipate your yeast to consume, turn into alcohol at just the right amount so that it doesn't stress the yeast or hurt anything, because that all translates to flavors in the final product.
All right. Yeah, because I know the wines are normally that 14 to 16%. The yeast above that, the wine yeast get killed because too much alcohol.
Correct.
And then you've got bacteria that take your say, your grain-neutral spirits and make vinegar, that's another set that survives on that and turns the and uses the alcohol as the food.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize you're harnessing nature. I mean, it's bacteria, yeast, and that's your employees, right?
Yeah, most I mean, some of the original breweries, they didn't even introduce yeast. Troon down in Hopewell to this day, my understanding, I haven't been there, but I've heard a lot about it, and they're supposedly using open vat fermentation.
The natural yeast.
But there's a lot of craft brewers out there that are doing there that they just pick up the natural yeast that's in the air. They have a way to maintain it so it doesn't have a bacterial infestation.
Right, and you can't get a bad one in there.
Right,
then, yeah.
and then you have your good beer. So.
Well, there was Belgian brewery was, one of the monasteries, the abbeys or whatever, and they wanted to redo their roof, but the roof had all the spores from the yeast, and they didn't want to lose them, so they saved the inside, and they put a new roof on, but they saved the old timbers where all that, they didn't want to lose that natural yeast that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's I think it's in England, there's a storage place for all these yeast that brewers, bakers, that there's samples of in case something happens. Like say that, say your distillery goes down with a fire and you've got a strain of yeast you've been using, and there's a bank somewhere you can.
They all have labs, these places. Any especially if they're big, they all have their own labs. They take their yeast strains and they probably have them in tubes in liquid nitrogen and they're those things are quite common that that's the bread and butter for them, so they can't afford to lose that.
An interesting topic, much like you said, where locality changes your flavor in spices and in everything, there's a lot of craft yeast developers and strain growers. There's a guy, East Coast Yeast, over in Hillsboro, and he maintains his own locally sourced yeasts and other
yeasts. So that spawned another business.
Because all those give unique flavors to your beers and your wines and your alcohols. And so, it's going to create new businesses of what local yeast can be used.
Yeah, and that's, I'll go to wines. When they talk about terroir with the whole combination of climate and the earth and all that, and how much minerality comes in through the water in the roots And one school of thought is that really the yeast is probably as much a factor as anything on the flavors of what you're doing. I mean, yes, you've got to grow your good base product, but then once done afterwards, what is it aged in? Is it French oak? Is it American oak? Is it chips? Is it a combination? Wineries are always changing. From you got an old barrel, you got a new barrel. Lescott's always like the used Jack Daniels. They have that symbiotic relationship there with the Scotch and the Jack Daniels. But they're starting to put stuff now. They're double aging. They're doing the bourbon and they're finishing in port or sherry wood.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, well, probably before bourbon was being made, that was probably what Scotch was aged in anyway, right?
Probably.
Maybe in a wine cask because that's what was there. It was port and it was sherry. Those were the wines that were shipped. Mm-hmm. The fortified wines. So, it's...
We know what's sort of interesting about it is like you were saying with the craft yeast. All yeast are going to convert sugar into ethanol. That's basic. But the character of each particular species or subspecies of the yeast has to do with the byproducts that they manufacture as well.
Okay,
and that's where the character of the flavors change. For instance, a lot of times a byproduct of certain metabolism might be small amino acid chains or parts of protein. Sometimes they're called oligopeptides
Pizza chemist, you knew that, right?
This is what happens when a chemist talks about
no,
distilling.
Well,
you can take the chemist out of the lab, but you can't take the lab out of the chemist. What can I say? Those are the things that give you the flavors, the characteristic flavors, and a lot of them are very similar to a lot of different kinds of varieties of a subspecies of yeast. And sometimes it's just a matter of how the ratios of how they're produced change. So that's really the character. I mean, they all make ethanol. That's a given. If they didn't, you wouldn't be using them.
Right.
It's just, you know, if you're saying this tastes like this or this tastes like this regional area, that has to do with the byproducts that's
from
also
the
being
native
formed.
Yeast.
Those are the additional minor flavor components that make the difference.
So that is really the terroir. Then is, you know, the yeast is,
yeah, absolutely
a big part of that.
It's not just yeast. It's a big. It's as much of a flavor ingredient as whether I'm using molasses or sugarcane or potatoes.
Yeah, and your rum now, do you use molasses?
Molasses, yes, molasses and cane sugar. Yes.
You know, I'm curious.
No corn syrup, right?
No. As a matter of fact, even with our mixed drinks, we were using another brand of ginger beer that we loved, but we realized quickly it was made with high fructose corn syrup, and so we nixed it and went with a different ginger beer because if we're going to take the time to hand peel potatoes, might as well take the time to think about everything else we're making a drink with.
Yeah, so some of the parts, right?
Yeah.
I was just wondering, you know, maybe you can, for a couple of minutes, talk about the different products you are making now and maybe some of the things you're imagining.
I'm going to break for a couple of messages and then, the great way to wind down here and get the lineup here from Kane Fowler at Skunktown Distillers.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hey, Big C here, doing a little practicing for the Hunterdon County Chamber's 16th Annual Golf Classic. We're teeing off a Tuesday, October 3rd at Hawk Point Golf Club. The signature sponsor this year is Hunterdon Healthcare. Besides enjoying a great game of golf, this event is an excellent way for you to promote your business via our sponsorship opportunities, silent auction, and networking luncheon. The Golf Classic launches at 8:30 a.m. with registration, breakfast, and a putting warm-up. This scramble format will begin with a shotgun start at 10 a.m. Plus, we will have some exciting contests to enjoy throughout the day. Oh yes, the winning foursome will be presented with the fabulous Hunterdon Cup. Talk about bragging rights. I got you this year, Team ExxonMobil. I'll see you on the first tee.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
The day.
All right, we're winding down, getting close to the hour with Kane and Pete here. We're going to ask Kane about a couple of his innovations here, a little twist on things. We saw a couple of things before came into the studio, but
we drank a few too.
Pete, you're not supposed to say that. You tasted.
You tripped and landed with your mouth on the cup.
It's research. So, what are we making, and how did and just use some of Pete's products? And
Yes. So our full line right now that's available is a regular vodka, potato vodka, as we mentioned. Then we take that and we actually enhance it by adding the Carolina Reaper pepper, which is one of the hottest peppers in the world. It's grown on my farm down in Delaware Township, just outside Surgeonsville. We temper it so that it's actually appeasable to the masses. It's something that you can put in a Bloody Mary and still have the character and the heat of the pepper without getting the full force.
Wow.
We then take that as an example of what we do in our distillery, and we merged it with coconut water and a couple of olives, and we call it the Skunk Town Original Island Volcano. And it's been so well received that the Surgeonsville Inn now serves it, and a couple other local restaurants and bars are working on highlighting that. So that's a great example of who would ever think to take a real spicy vodka, put it in, or a spicy pepper, put it in with vodka, and mix it with coconut water. But
coconut water, okay. So, yeah, I was going to say sometimes because fat will help ease the.
Yeah, they just they play off of each other. So you have the coconut start with a nice.
Well, you think of Thai cuisine would
very similar. Yes, coconut with spice.
So do you post the recipes on your?
We do.
Website?
We have a lot of our things up on the website.
See, and that's kind of what drives because that's the Moscow Mule was from somebody trying to use up ginger beer, right?
Yeah.
The guy, the story was he got stuck. He had some ginger beer and some vodka took over this place. Had to get rid of it and put it together and. You know, said Moscow because it was Russian. I guess it was Stolichnaya.
Yep.
Was the original. Yeah. It's funny, but yeah, the cocktail will drive
those
sales.
100%.
So,
we also have a silver rum or a regular rum. We have an oaked rum, which you both tripped into earlier. And the uniqueness about that is it's unlike a spiced rum or a dark rum. It's colored, but it's actually rum that's been finished with heavily charred oak chips.
So you char the oak first.
So we char the oak chips first.
What's the reason for that?
So it's any wood barrel that you would soak in, you would actually char the inside first.
Yeah. You do it with, I know bourbon has to, right?
Yeah,
charred
and
first.
And it creates a charcoal lining,
okay.
Which becomes, in essence, a filter.
Yes.
It filters
carbon.
Some of those impurities.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, it's a layer of activated carbon. So that's what we do, but it also imparts a flavor. And in ours, it's wonderful because it's a campfire type of a rum. It's a smoky, a slight sweet, some people said burnt marshmallow kind of a flavor.
Yeah, s'more thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so straight around the fire pit, but you can also throw it in with, as you said, a ginger beer and make a great dark and stormy with a slight whiskey flavor to it.
Coffee.
Yeah, definitely.
You want to flavor coffee with it?
I'm a distiller. I'll put it in anything. It's okay. So the two rums, and then we have the apple pie moonshine. Again, tripped into that. So that's apple concentrate, some great liquor, maple syrup, brown sugar, and cinnamon sticks. And if that doesn't make your mouth water, then stop by.
Well, the right time of year for it now.
Definitely. It's going to carry all the way through the end of the year because it goes great on vanilla ice cream. It'll go great into something that's pumpkin flavored. And then at the end of the year, we throw it into some eggnog. And it's just...
That's
that's a good idea.
Yeah, so...
I have to try that. My wife likes it. She's always trying to find the one thing to put in eggnog. I mean, that might be it.
That could be the trick.
It's got all those nice... spices.
Absolutely.
Apple pie spices.
Especially the cinnamon spice from Pete at Black River.
Which cinnamon do you use in that? Pete and I had a cinnamon
the
tasting
one that he
here.
Suggested to me to use. He
okay.
said, I know where you're going with
the
this.
The
this
crunchy
is
one
you
or the
he's using Pandang cinnamon. He's using Pandang cinnamon, which is those are the cinnamon sticks that I've been providing to
okay.
him. But we can certainly, if he's ready to experiment, we can go with Celanese cinnamon, and we can go with Saigon cinnamon, and they all have their own flavor. I think.
Yeah.
So remember, we had
we were here crunching cinnamon sticks,
and
I never knew there was. You know, I thought cinnamon was cinnamon.
I was just gonna, don't tell the feds there's this many types of cinnamon. I don't want to have to get the approvals on different recipes. And then the final one that we have right now is a Thatcher's Rye Whiskey. So it's a rye whiskey named after a local farmer that was one of the founding fathers of Surgeonsville. Next that's actually coming out after our Peach Shine that we mentioned earlier is a golden gin. So it's going to be a composite gin or a bathtub gin, if you'd like to give it the discredit that it deserves. And it really, it's finished nicely after a blend of, I believe, around 18 or 19 spices that we put into the thing to make it complete.
And what do you? The name of it again was?
It's going to be Golden Gin because it's actually got a golden hue to it.
Is that from the botanicals?
Yes, it's from
the
botanicals.
So you're not
going to
do the, what is it, Seagram's? I think they age it a little bit or something?
Yeah,
or?
No, we're not going to do it. There's a couple that are aging. There's another one that does a honey gin. It's amazing. So but definitely the spices. And then after that, we'll probably start running out the rest of the year. And next year, we may start playing with some tinctures. So that'll be the next conversation of the spice world is.
Yeah, then making tinctures would be really interesting.
Yeah, vodka-based tinctures is a whole
other... Sorry, so you'll make it like the essence for them?
I won't make the tincture. I'll supply the spice, but they can make their own
that'll
tinctures.
That'll be like your concentrate.
Correct.
That you can, okay.
Yeah, it's usually just an alcohol extract.
Preserved, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. You know, I was just wondering that peach... particular peach one, though. It might be even good with a little vanilla in it.
Vanilla? Okay.
I was thinking, hey, I don't know. Yeah, I think they go together, but hey, that's me.
The beautiful thing with distilling is there's the actual product, and then there's the drink. And so you can go in a lot of different ways with them together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and also,
that's true.
Like I say, with apples, it's not really used as one of the botanicals or flavoring things. It's used more... probably is the base,
mm-hmm.
if you will.
And I think a lot of listeners are going to expect to hear a lot of apple things for sale this year. Not necessarily through us, but I know the apple farmers and talking to a lot of the farmers, they're going to have a great crop, but it's not going to be an easily sellable crop because a lot of it got bruised in the hailstorms in the spring. So a lot of people aren't jumping at the apples because they just look bruised, but they're fine.
Well,
inside.
This is the other... problem with, you know, you want to talk about organic or local. I mean, you know, again, our government grading, we're taught that everything has to look perfect and nice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a couple of, I mean, we said, well, if the worm thought the apple was sweet enough, it must be ready. As long as you don't find half a worm in there, I guess you're good. But, yeah, so say Milik's farm has an excess of, say they're going to produce cider, so, you know, you could go and say, hey, you know, there's a base for me. Hey, you got sugar,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's already fermented for you.
Off we go.
You just throw it in the pot still and come up with something. So,
correct.
All right, we're going to wind down a little bit here. It's we've got a show after us, so we can't go over. But this has been fun, I tell you. It's
definitely.
The world of distilling and how everything relates. I mean, you know, we're a restaurant, but restaurants are to us are food and beverage. We always call it. The ones that, you know, I mean, it's tough in New Jersey. Licensing has now made it available so you guys can start these things. A lot of it didn't happen because post-prohibition, everything was wiped out, and there was no,
correct.
If there was nobody clamoring for the way to do it, there was no need. So
correct.
A lot
correct.
Of it have been the legal uphill
the
battle.
The changes,
here.
Yeah, and thank you know, regardless of where you sit, at least Governor Christie passed a law that allowed craft distilleries to come into existence
nice.
in 2015. So
real quick,
us.
Where
sure.
where in Flemington, besides your place, can we get Skunk Town Distillery?
Oh, so in the liquor stores, you can get it at Little Brothers, Raritan Liquors.
Yeah, Johnny Joe.
Yep, Bourbon
Steve
Streets,
said he was bringing some
all
in,
those
yeah.
places. And then a lot of the local inns and restaurants, so Ryland Inn, Harvest Moon Inn, Surgeonsville Inn, places like that. But thank you guys for having me. I look forward to coming back.
Oh, yeah. We'll have another one. All right.
Absolutely.
Bill signing off. We'll talk to you in a week.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Experts say the flooding along the Texas Gulf Coast from Harvey is something people don't see for lifetimes. Here's Harris County Office of Emergency Management spokesman Francisco Sanchez.
There are dozens of communities that saw a 500-year flood event, and just as many that saw a 1,000-year flood event.
And meteorologist Rob Carolyn says there's still more rain to come in some spots.
Total rainfall in the Houston area could exceed 45 inches by the end of the week. The flooding from the storm system over the upper Texas coast looks like it's going to continue to not only be an issue this week, but probably through the Labor Day weekend and into next week.
More National Guard members now being called in to assist with the heavy flooding in Houston. Meanwhile, along the Mid-Atlantic, a tropical storm named Irma is expected to start bringing impacts before the end of the day. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, my name is Kip Herridge, and I'm the founder of the Vertical Research Advisory, or VRA. I've been in the investment business for 32 years, managing money for the Wall Street elite and raising hundreds of millions for their companies. In 2003, I created the VRA, my investment and economic newsletter that's been crushing the market for 14 years. We're not a brokerage firm.